Welcome one and all to another edition of The Damage Report with me, John Arola, and we're joined once again by Yasmin Aliya Khan. Yasmin, it's great to have you here. Everybody watching this knows already that you make great videos for Rebel HQ and you're a political commentator in your own right, and they probably already listened to Global Thread. But what they might not know is that you're also a birthday girl.
I am a birthday girl today. I chose to spend my birthday with all of you here on The Damage Report. And I normally don't work on my birthday, so this is a special treat for me, really.
That's awesome. So they've also learned that you make poor life choices. You should be taking today off, but you chose wrong, so now you're stuck with it, and it's good for us because we get to talk politics with you. So thank you for that. Very excited to have you on. I'm already seeing a bunch of birthday messages rolling in. If people want to send those, we'll be responding during our breaks. Oh yes, oh no, they're sending in a ton. And we will be talking about them soon. But I also want to let you know that we do have a lot of news that we're going to be discussing. Not only the latest on Herschel Walker, but Donald Trump elbowing Ron DeSantis in the throat. And it's a throated elbow that's going to pay dividends as we approach the midterm elections. So this is just a down payment on the fun we're gonna have with their growing feud. We've got more reactions to the Fetterman-Oz debate. The New York Post gets hacked. Matthew Perry decides to just make everyone in the world hate him in one fell swoop. We got a lot of fun to talk about, especially once we get into the aftermath. But in advance of all of that, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream so the people know we're live, that would be great. And we'll be responding to your comments, tweets, questions, concerns, all that during our breaks. I'm gonna throw one out though. California Dragon says, happy birthday. It says Jasmine, it is Yasmin.
It is Jasmine, yes, but I'll take it.
Do you get Jasmine a lot?
I used to. I get it a lot less often now. I don't know why that is, but I used to get called Jasmine, Yasmin, like a lot of variations. It's just like, it's a straight just Yasmin, that's it.
Sure. You know? Exactly. Well, California Dragon's thought that counts. Thank you. And Lynn says it as well, says, hope you're not dragon today. No, she seems full of energy. I wouldn't worry about that.
Yeah, I appreciate a good pun though. Thank you.
Thank you. That's a birthday pun. Okay, well, with that, why don't we start breaking down the news, beginning with this.
We're a party of racists, Sean. Me and you're a racist. The Republican Party's racist.
Wow, Lindsey Graham woke up and decided to be honest for once. No, that was actually him defending Herschel Walker in a weird way. What you need to understand is that Herschel Walker is facing an allegation that he pressured a woman to have an abortion and then paid for that abortion. I'm not referring to the other scandal where he pressured a woman to have an abortion and paid for that abortion. I'm talking about the new woman that he pressured to have an abortion and then paid for that abortion. Understanding, of course, that he doesn't believe that you should be able to have abortions. If you do, or if a doctor assists you, should be massively fined and maybe thrown in jail. But for apparently 3 decades now, he's been an active fan of the practice. He's denied it, of course, so bear that in mind. It's allegations. That said, he's not the only one denying it. He ran to Fox News to receive a massive assist from them. Here's Sean Hannity talking about this newest scandal.
There's no evidence presented at all that corroborated the story that they said. The only evidence they presented is you might have dated some woman, I'm not sure who it is. You know, Lindsey, I think back to the Kavanaugh hearings. I think back to the Bork hearings. I think back to the Clarence Thomas hearings. The late, great Herman Cain, a dear friend of mine. Herman Cain, one woman after another, it was like on a daily basis, another person came forward, then another. Then all of a sudden he said, I don't have the money to fight this. He got out of the race and no more women came out anymore. There's no more allegations against Justice Kavanaugh anymore. No more allegations against Clarence Thomas after he was confirmed. It seems like this pattern, it happens over and over again, which is why I believe in due process and the presumption of innocence.
Particularly when it's a Republican candidate. If it's some allegation made on 4chan about Hunter Biden, he doesn't give a damn about the innocence thing. He's all in. First of all, I would like to note that it is awesome that in your defense of Herschel Walker, you remind us that you guys frequently put forward candidates that have a string of sexual assault allegations or abortion allegations or all those sorts of things. You also remind us, by the way, that in every one of those cases, you've never once believed any of these accounts, no matter how many contemporaneous confirmations of it there are. In the case of the first abortion scandal for Herschel Walker, the documented evidence that it happened, that he sent money for it, combined with his laughable inability to convincingly deny that it happened. You don't care about that. You put forward terrible men and then you apologize for them and ignore their sins, their crimes, and all of that. So that's not so much a defense of Herschel Walker as an indictment of Sean Hannity himself. But they also throw out that once the men either get their positions or resign, the allegations go away. Let's note very briefly that that's not remotely true. Donald Trump became president in 2016, and any number of additional allegations of sexual harassment and sexual assault came out afterwards. So he's sweeping all of that under the rug. But in the case of people like Kavanaugh, can you really blame the women from not wanting to come forward? They not only found out that it isn't going to make a difference, that these guys are still going to get positions, lifelong positions of incredible power and influence, but also not only will it not matter at all, but your life will be destroyed if you dare to come forward. So this is like a indecipherable puzzle to Sean Hannity. For a rational person with an ounce of compassion, it's the easiest thing in the world to understand. We're going to get to more defenses of Herschel Walker, but Yasmin, what do you think about this most recent scandal?
I liked how he said the late and great Herman Cain, and I don't remember Herman Cain ever being great, but that's another story. But the thing is, it's like what you said, these allegations don't go anywhere. They're still there. They're still waiting for their due process that a lot of them have never actually gotten. And then on top of that, of course, it's so difficult for a woman to come out and make these allegations against people who are not only in the public eye, but they're strong political figures, right? They're influential people in our actual national government. People like Brett Kavanaugh, he's on the Supreme Court now. How daunting would it be for a woman to come out and make an allegation against a Supreme Court justice, especially knowing that people like Sean Hannity are going to go on his show and speak to millions of Republican voters and basically discredit her before any evidence is even allowed to come out. And even if there is evidence, they're not gonna show it. They're gonna downplay it, and they're going to discredit the woman entirely.
Yeah. Well, look, Sean Hannity, his main objective there is to just tell the audience, okay, this looks really bad. We know that this looks really bad, but we really need you to support this guy. So didn't you get really mad during the Kavanaugh thing? Didn't you get really mad? Think of these other times that you were mad, and don't be like worried or anxious about Walker, about his inability to formulate a statement or get through an entire week without a massive scandal coming forward. Just focus on how angry you are. That's his objective. Lindsey Graham is gonna go a few steps beyond that. Let's jump into his defense of Herschel Walker.
Well, I mean, you know, I've seen this movie before, up close and personal. If you're a conservative, they don't give a damn about the truth. They're trying to destroy his life 13 days before the election. They did the same thing to Kavanaugh. There's another one and another one and another one. It got to be six. Three people out and out lied. Nothing happened to them. How did that movie end? Kavanaugh is on the Supreme Court. Herschel's going to the Senate. And what is this all about? Why Herschel? They're beating all of our guys up. But what is it about this guy? He changes the entire narrative of the left. We're a party of racists, Sean. Me and you are racist. The Republican Party's racist. Well, what happens when the Republican Party elects and nominates Herschel Walker, an African-American black Heisman Trophy winner, right? Olympian. It destroys the whole narrative. John James, Tim Scott, Herschel Walker. Everybody in San Francisco is going to jump off a bridge if we elect this man. A black conservative beats a black liberal in Georgia.
Okay, I guess it destroys a narrative. If there was a narrative that you guys ever looked forward and put forward candidates that were qualified for the position or knew anything about the issues or weren't massive liars on the level of Donald Trump. If that existed as a narrative, then yes, I guess supporting Herschel Walker has destroyed that narrative. Yeah, there can be black conservative candidates. There can be black Republican candidates. That can happen and has happened. I don't know what narrative in his mind he's fighting against. Yeah, there are bad unqualified candidates of all different groups. There are rich bad candidates and poor bad candidates and of all different racial groups and all different genders and all of that stuff. Herschel Walker is bad. Yes. It's not a totally unique thing though. I don't know why that's what you're focused on. But Lindsey Graham is actually looking to the future. So take a look at his closing argument here.
They're scared to death of Herschel Walker because if Herschel Walker becomes a Republican, maybe every other young child in America of color might want to be a Republican. That's what they're trying to do. Don't let them get away with it.
So the whole thing is obviously very weird. The argument is weird. Him doing his like, I'm fired up Kavanaugh hearing voice is weird. The fact that after he said person of color, he like went in for a little smooch or something. I don't know what that head thing was that he did with Herschel Walker. Like back off, dude, seriously. I barely know you. I barely know what's going on or what day it is. I barely know you though. I don't know, Yasmin. The whole thing is super weird. You can be a member of any party you want, regardless of whoever you are. I think that's a weird takeaway considering all that's come out during this candidacy.
Like the whole time that Lindsey Graham was talking though, I was just watching Herschel Walker just sitting there very awkwardly. Like he's not like, was he allowed to speak? I don't know. I don't know if he was allowed to speak by his GOP overlords. But you know, the GOP putting up somebody like Herschel Walker doesn't disprove the fact that the GOP is mostly comprised of white people. And it doesn't disprove the narrative that the GOP is primarily concerned with the rights and the livelihoods of white people. Herschel Walker, he's a trophy to them. He was put into the position that he's in precisely so that people like Lindsey Graham can go on Fox News and say the things that he just said. Anyone with a modicum of intelligence knows that there is no actual reason for someone like Herschel Walker. There's no reason why he would be or should be considered a viable senatorial candidate. He's a trophy, he's a token, whatever you want to call it, and it's insulting. And Herschel Walker lets himself be used by these people.
Yeah, no, 100%. I get that that's the thing that he's going to focus on. I think that there is a lot to focus on about this candidacy and a lot of things that can teach us that are just deeply distressing. Herschel Walker's race is literally the least important part of this. The fact that he was chosen just because he was a popular athlete of any race, that's sort of weird. The fact that he has no experience, the best claims to experience that he can invoke are jobs that he made up that he never actually had. That's a big issue. The fact that of the very few things that he can claim to be clear on, for instance, being pro-life. He doesn't talk much about policy or anything like that, but that's one thing he's talked about. It clearly isn't reflective of how he's lived his actual life. The fact that he can't get through a debate, he can't get through a speech, he doesn't understand what's going on. Those are all things that I think we should talk about and think about and worry about going forward. What this represents for what candidates might come after Herschel Walker. His race has nothing to do with any of that. I think for most people, just for Lindsey Graham, that's the part that he's clearly the most interested in. In any event, we've been pretty clear about what we think about this. I do want to go to a response from, we don't often talk about The View, but I did think that Whoopi Goldberg had a pretty good response to what Lindsey Graham was saying there. So let's jump into this video.
Well, what happens when the Republican Party elects and nominates Herschel Walker, an African-American black Heisman Trophy winner, right? Olympian, it destroys the whole narrative.
So here's the thing you need to know, Lindsey. Just because we see a black person does not mean that we do monkey see, monkey do. And I'm sure that you don't know how insulting that is. But let us just say to you, don't ever say that again because you look ignorant as hell. Don't do that.
I think the sad thing about this is, you know, Herschel Walker is woefully underqualified for this job. Mm-hmm. And the only reason he was chosen and also supported by Trump is because Raphael Warnock, the senator in Georgia, is black. And they wanted someone who was black to confront him,
it's a
to
fool,
oppose
we
him.
We don't know what to, we can't tell each other apart.
Exactly. And I think it's sad that the GOP is using Herschel Walker in that way.
I think it's sad too. I'm no longer so concerned about how it's sad for Herschel Walker because he's lying massively about these claims that have been made against him. I lose some of my compassion for him when he's denigrating these women for coming forward about their experiences. But yeah, that's 100% true. I don't agree with Whoopi Goldberg on a lot politically recently, but she is totally right. Yasmin, what do you think?
No, I agree, especially with what is her name, Sunny, what she was saying.
Sunny Hostin, I think is her name, I believe.
Yeah, sorry, but yeah. But the thing is, it really shouldn't be about race and all these things, all these identity politics things. You need representation in government, but when it's used this way against people and against, you know, the better will of what's good for the people, it's really dangerous and it's distracting more than anything. And we know that Herschel Walker is not a qualified candidate by any means. We know that he lies about things that he shouldn't be lying about. We know that he's been caught lying multiple times, but we also know that Republican voters are still going to vote for him. You know, every time he gets caught in a lie, we see his poll numbers sink and then they just come right back up, because what other option do these diehard Republicans have? They're not going to vote for Raphael Warnock. They might be annoyed and disappointed in the things that Walker says, but they're still gonna vote for him. They don't care about the hypocrisy. They don't care about the lies. And they don't care that he doesn't actually exemplify any of these Christian values that they claim to care about so much. They're still gonna vote for Herschel Walker over a literal reverend. So that's where we are.
Yeah, while telling massive lies about Warnock. It's the whole thing is just pathetic. It is clear what Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump and the others think about Herschel Walker, what they think about the black voters of Georgia. But this does not reflect poorly on those voters. It reflects poorly on them because this is just another form of projection. They clearly think that they should decide which candidates to support, which candidates to back, at least partially on race. That clearly is something that signals to them something important. I don't think most people are like that, but Lindsey Graham and Donald Trump, that is clearly the way that they're approaching this. It's incredibly insulting. I think it's incredibly transparent. We'll see if any of this breaks through. And unfortunately, as Yasmin, as you were alluding to, the evidence doesn't seem super strong. Now, following the first abortion scandal, we pointed out that the polls did seem to move to favor Warnock. Well, we got to update you on that. Let's take a look. So after the abortion story broke, a couple points of support for Herschel Walker seemed to melt away. And like in an irrefutable demonstration of how little Herschel Walker actually cares about any of this, whether you can trust what he says, cost him like 2 points for like 5 days. That was it. Like on top, he's right back. It is an incredibly, incredibly close race. And what's interesting is, like, I focus on the poll results, but what you're seeing here, let's put that back up, is what made people at least look into these candidates. So when the abortion story first broke, the first one, that did create a spike in searches about Walker, which sort of makes sense. But it wasn't even as much as just when they debate. And like, yes, I'm glad that people care enough about a debate that they're looking into the candidates following it. That's good, I suppose. But this is an absolutely massive scandal. Any other candidate, but like 2015 or before, this would sink any candidacy, this clear hypocrisy on the question of abortion. And for him, it was something that like people were like, I'll Google a little bit. Maybe I'll think about it for like 3 or 4 days. Then we're moving on with the lives. We don't care. And that just, I find that super depressing, Yasmin.
Yeah, well, I mean, you said it. Before 2015, this would have been a much bigger deal. 2015 changed everything, right? 2015 was when Donald Trump announced his candidacy. That was the year that the Republican Party decided to go all in on this guy who, again, just like Herschel Walker, was unqualified for the position. He was a terrible person. He lied. He did all these things that would make a bad presidential candidate, but they backed him anyway. Yeah. And not only that, but they rallied support from Republican voters. So now we have like an entire subsection of our country that's, you know, fully invested in the cult of Trumpism. That's what we've created. That's the country that we live in these days. And these are the kinds of elections that we're seeing as a result of what happened in 2015 and 16.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I think we're gonna go to our first break just a little bit early. When we come back though, we've got some responses to the Fetterman and Oz race, including John Fetterman talking a little bit about the meta commentary about that debate, what it says about American politics. We'll have that for you and more after this. Okay, we've got so much more to get to. Let's jump into it.
Knew it wasn't going to be easy after, you know, having a stroke after five months. In fact, in fact, I don't think that's ever been done before in American political history before, actually. You know, after that stroke, I got knocked down, but I got back up. And I hope that when you had those challenges, when you're...
So that is John Fetterman a day after his big debate with Dr. Oz. And I think he understands, as most did, that it did not go super smoothly. He had some good lines, and Dr. Oz massively embarrassed himself in a number of different ways, which we'll talk about. But it was tough, and he acknowledges, I'm still recovering from the stroke. I'm trying to get back up, and having the doctor as well as so much of the media constantly hitting him in incredibly unfair ways, that does suck. And we are indeed seeing that under the guise of we're just asking questions. It is not just Fox News that is trying to implant in the minds of viewers that this is a disqualifying thing, the fact that the guy might have a little bit of trouble hearing or speaking. You had Wolf Blitzer asking literally the press secretary for Joe Biden, does he have any concerns about Fetterman after the debate? I think that's a fair question. I think Joe Biden probably is considering switching over to Dr. Oz because Fetterman stumbled a bit. That's probably what's going on, Wolf Blitzer. Totally fair debate. Totally reasonable for a really influential journalist to be asking. You have Jake Tapper bringing on CNN's medical analyst to talk about the severity of his significant neurological injury. And they go beyond that. It's not just vague. He has a specific concern that's really gonna make a lot of people worry. Let's go to that video.
You said you think this is more than just an issue with auditory processing, which is what some reporters in the campaign seem to be suggesting, that he hears the words, but he's just having trouble computing what they mean. It takes him a couple seconds. You say he also has expressive aphasia. What is that?
Yeah, so he's had an injury to his brain in the area that helps someone process speech. So most people have thought that Mr. Fetterman's injury was how he processed sound, which is why they gave him the prompter. But what was really apparent last night was that he has expressive aphasia.
Oh my God, that's actually really concerning. I mean, like as that guy says, a lot of us just thought that he had a problem with communication, but it's something beyond that. It's this expressive aphasia. And since I'm not a doctor and there's no way to know what that means, I guess I'm just gonna leave this little interaction on cable news being very, very worried about John Fetterman. Oh wait, I can Google it, I looked it up. Expressive aphasia means, for instance, according to Hopkins Medicine, that the person might eliminate the words and or the from sentences. They might speak in short but still meaningful sentences. Well, dear God, not expressive aphasia, not in this economy. That's a communication thing. Like the headlines and the interviewer all, oh, this isn't just a communication thing. It's much worse because now we have words that we know you won't be able to define that just mean it's a communication thing. It's the same damn thing. And this is not Fox News, it's not Breitbart. This isn't Ben Shapiro. This is CNN in multiple different instances, desperately trying to get people in Pennsylvania to be worried about the fact that John Fetterman just speaks with a little bit of difficulty. You saw him at the rally, by the way, he seemed perfectly fine. Not 100%, but he communicates a lot better than Louis Gohmert or Marjorie Greene at this point. But that's not the impression you would get from these very serious establishment media types that are just asking questions. Yasmin, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a crazy double standard that the left has for its political candidates. And that double standard is perpetuated by a lot of left-leaning or less center media like CNN. The things that are coming out of John Fetterman's mouth are not nearly as bad as the things that we've heard out of very lucid, non-health related, candidates on the right who don't have issues with, what is it, the aphasia thing, right? They don't have those issues, right? Yeah, so it's not a problem, but they're making it a problem. They're making it to be more than it is, more than it should be. And I think we need to commend Fetterman instead for going through what he went through. That's a huge deal to have a stroke and then to still be on the campaign trail and still debating on a national stage and still going to rallies. That's a big deal.
Yeah, 100%. I absolutely hate it. And look, I know everybody's been led to believe that the media is like totally liberal. It's liberal media bias. CNN, MSNBC, they love the Democrats. And yes, there are plenty of Democrats that they like. And so it might make people wonder, well, then why the hell would they want Dr. Oz? And I don't even know that they actively do want a Dr. Oz. I know that they love pretending that they're neutral or whatever. That's only about ideology. When it comes to protecting the status quo, especially the financial status quo, that is always where their bias is going to lie. So they might disagree with Dr. Oz on some social stuff or something, but if they think Dr. Oz is going to deliver business deregulation or let CNN merge with other networks or keep their own personal income taxes low, they can ignore the social stuff. That's just fun and games. That's just the sport that they watch or whatever. What they really care about is their taxes. And they probably have made the decision or the determination that Dr. Oz is going to be a more reliable vote to keep their taxes low or possibly even lower than they are now than John Fetterman would be. And so it's very easy for them to just ask questions, even if it's incredibly ableist. Even if it's incredibly ableist when they've been told for weeks that a lot of disabled people find this to be highly offensive. They clearly care more about their taxes than insulting literally millions of people suffering with the exact same medical conditions that John Fetterman is currently recovering from. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts before we move on?
Yeah, I think what we're also seeing here is the fact that there is no truly unbiased media, right? At least here, I feel like we're more transparent about our biases, right? Like we're very upfront about it. You know how we typically feel about certain things. We know how we lean. But on networks like CNN, for instance, especially in this particular case, you know, you see them trying to play that two sides kind of thing. And that's, you know, part of what we've been seeing with CNN specifically lately, since they've been under new management. They're trying a new thing, right? And I guess this is where it gets us, you know. This is where we see them trying to pretend like they're not as biased as maybe they are, and maybe try to pretend like they're trying to look at both sides and trying to pretend like they're actually getting down to the crux of the issues, right? But at the end of the day, they're hurting a candidate. It is ableist, as you said, and it's not fair, right? It's a really high, much higher standard that they hold candidates on the left to than the candidates on the right.
100%. Yeah. Yeah, it's not to say that nobody will mention the fact that Dr. Oz reminded everyone that he's going to let the county dog catcher choose what happens to your uterus or whatever. They might briefly
mention
that.
And how many dogs did he kill also, right? Didn't he kill like
speaking of dog catchers, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, but he was really articulate while he was killing the dog, so we can ignore
counts
that.
Counts for more. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. They don't want the debate to be about the issues because they're not supposed to say on the air what position they have on the issues. So they don't get to engage in the fun opining. But if you make it about communication and optics and are you worried, if you make it vague, then all of a sudden Jake Tapper gets to act like a pundit. It's way more fun and entertaining for him there. It doesn't do, you know, the service to your viewers of actually making sure they know what John Fetterman would do in terms of actual policy versus Dr. Oz, but it is more fun along the way. Donald Trump has not yet launched his 2024 presidential election, but he is already attempting to take down his most likely foe, Ron DeSantis. And he's using a unique weapon to do that. That weapon is called Marco Rubio. He is wielding Marco Rubio as a weapon in regards to this rally that he's going to be doing in the near future. Donald Trump announced that on November 6th, so just 2 days before the midterm elections, he's going to be heading to Miami, which I looked it up is in Florida, and he's going to be doing this big rally. Donald Trump, Senator Marco Rubio, who's in a relatively tight Senate race, and you know who won't be joining them? The popular Republican governor of Florida, who's also in a race right now. Ron DeSantis not invited to that rally in his own state 2 days before the midterms. They talk about it's going to be a get out the vote rally. Well, for certain people, I guess, in support of special guest Senator Marco Rubio. Talks about how Donald Trump, his endorsement record is currently undefeated 19-0, which I don't care enough to look that up. I don't think that it's true, but it's interesting that he's not getting behind DeSantis there. That is not lost, by the way, on DeSantis and his camp. Apparently, some people in DeSantis's orbit complained that the Florida governor's team was not informed of the rally prior to Trump announcing it. saying, you've got the Sunday before election day totally hijacked by Trump, parachuting in on Trump Force One, taking up the whole day. No Republican could go to a DeSantis event that day, none. And DeSantis won't be here? This is big. Another called it an elbow to Ron's throat and blamed Trump advisors. Yeah, I bet that's what it is. I bet Donald Trump would never do anything petty to hurt Ron DeSantis. It's all on his advisors. It's a scheduling whoopsie doopsie, I think, actually. Yasmin, what do you think?
Just a little upsie daisy, whoopsie daisy. You know, this has to be so annoying for DeSantis right now. He's got midterm elections coming up. He's got things he needs to be doing. He's supposed to be campaigning for himself and for his senator. And instead of focusing his attentions where he actually needs to be focusing them right now, he's got to deal with Donald Trump, a literal child, a toddler who's acting just like a child. And at this point, he's just more of a nuisance than anything. What I think is that overall, I don't think DeSantis is that worried about Trump. I think a lot of the GOP is trying to get away from Trump. Overall, I'm not talking about this particular event, right? But I think they're trying to get away from Trump, and they're not going to do it completely until they have someone to replace him with. And DeSantis knows that he's the guy that they're looking at. And DeSantis already stole Tom Brady from Donald Trump, so he's not too happy about that.
Oh, who would be? this is hilarious. I mean, it is 2 days before the election, and they make a great point. Like, you're not going to get high profile people to come to your thing. They're definitely going to go to the bozo rally over with Donald Trump. Now look, could this end up helping out Ron DeSantis a little bit anyway by accident? Maybe. I mean, if he does inspire Republicans to vote who weren't going to, presumably they will also vote for Ron DeSantis, even if it's not the point of the rally. So that could help Ron DeSantis. I don't know who is attending a Donald Trump rally 2 days before the election who wasn't planning to vote. So I don't know exactly who this is really targeted at anyway. But the one other, it would be an interesting move for Donald Trump to go beyond just snubbing DeSantis in his own state. I don't think that he has the intestinal fortitude, but think about how much it would benefit Trump if he could engineer a Ron DeSantis loss. Because Ron DeSantis wants that position as governor so that he can deliver red meat for the base for the next year and a half leading up to the primaries. He can push every gay student back into the closet. He can ship migrants to the middle of the ocean. I don't know what his plans are, but crazy stuff. And he needs to be the governor to be able to do that stuff. It would be really beneficial to Donald Trump if he were to lose. Donald Trump could pull like a Game of Thrones style twist and like endorse his opponent and campaign against him. I don't think that he would ever do that. I think that he's too scared about the fight against Ron DeSantis, but I would love to see it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a question of how much of a threat is Donald Trump unto himself, and how much of the GOP is pulling his strings kind of behind the scenes, right? So how much would the establishment GOP members, you know, like the Mitch McConnells and those kind of guys, how much would they actually be able to stop Trump from doing something like that, from self-sabotaging the party? Because Donald Trump may or may not be a part of the party for very long going forward. We'll have to see. He's under a lot of indictments right now. So
I know. I don't have any faith in that. But yes, there are many of them. I will grant you that. Okay. Time to move on to our next topic. Look at that. Three stories in one block. What the hell is going on? Let's move into this. If you woke up this morning and you follow the New York Post on Twitter, you might have been a little bit surprised by what you saw. Their tweets included things like, we must assassinate AOC for America. Okay. Zeldin, Lee Zeldin, candidate in New York, says, I'm not gonna read the actual message, but it's claims that he is going to sexually assault Kathy Hochul, who he's running against. They have a tweet quoting Governor Greg Abbott saying, I will order Border Patrol to start slaughtering illegals. And they also have Lee Zeldin making racist remarks about Eric Adams. Chris Rufo, the guy who invented all the groomer stuff, saying we must destroy and imprison union teachers. Claims that they need to murder Joe and Hunter Biden. Now, they didn't actually send these out intentionally. They say that they have been hacked and they're investigating the cause. And I have seen more recent updates saying that they think a disgruntled employee was responsible for this. Now, they didn't send these out, and anybody can be hacked. They're not responsible for the fact that they got hacked. They're the victim here. But also, some of those aren't super far off from stuff that they would have rolled out anyway. I mean, have you followed the New York Post? Their stuff is wild. No, they're not going to openly say we should assassinate AOC, but they've been fear-mongering about AOC for literally years. The stuff about Greg Abbott is like, it's like a slightly weaker verb away from being any random thing that he would actually say. And again, they're not responsible for this. And I'm not saying that I think a lot of people were fooled into thinking that these were true. I hope that that's not the case. I hope that the tweets are crazy enough that they wouldn't believe that. But I also think, I don't know, like the fact that the Rufo one says we must destroy and imprison union teachers. That could totally be a thing that he says. And so this is to me a learning moment about how extreme the other side has gotten. And maybe for the New York Post to think a little bit about how they present news. Again, they're the victims here. They're not responsible for this, but that doesn't mean it can't be an opportunity to learn a little bit.
I mean, let's hope that they learn. And it's like the headline about my governor, Governor Greg Abbott, that one was kind of scary because, yeah, I don't know. Like he said some pretty crazy things, especially about immigrants down at the border. And it is plausible. If you already believe in a lot of those things, then it's plausible that he also said that. It's just every time they say one thing, the next thing they have to say has to be a little bit more dramatic, a little bit more intense. And eventually you could kind of get to that point where you're calling for assassinations and things like that. But a side effect of these sorts of stunts and hackings is that it actually discourages people who might actually be bright and intelligent and motivated to get involved in the democratic process. Stunts like this are not going to entice people to run for public office. It's a bully tactic, and unfortunately, it's an effective one. And on top of that, the average citizen, as you said, they already have a hard time distinguishing between what's real and what's fake on the news and on social media, especially on Twitter of all places. And, you know, good for the Post for deleting the tweets and for disclosing the hack. But this is kind of how conspiracy theories are made. If something can possibly happen, then the people who are already paranoid are more likely to believe that it is happening and that it's happening all the time, or at least whenever that particular narrative is convenient for whatever theory that they are proposing at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And the only other comment I'll make about the conspiracy theory is I saw replies to their tweet saying that these were hacks, they didn't send these out. And already you had right wingers claiming that this is a Democrat plot to make it seem as if there's more racism than there actually is. And maybe it is a Democrat. It's possible. We live in a complex universe. I can't predict literally everything. But when someone chooses to take over an outlet to make racist remarks, to call for the death of AOC and Joe Biden, I don't think we should instantly assume that it's a strong lefty that's doing that. Maybe the sort of person that would tweet racist things is racist. I know it's wild, but maybe that's a demonstration of racism and not actually proof that racism doesn't exist. I don't know, maybe something to think about.
Yeah, what a weird like yarn on the wall kind of conspiracy that would be if it was a leftist who was doing any of this. Crazy.
Exactly, 100%. Now we're gonna take our second break of the hour. When we come back though, Twitter recently hacked for the New York Post. Apparently has a new owner. We're gonna break down what we think might come of this after this break. He's got the kitchen sink. It's like a meme or something. He's very, very funny and clever and awesome and cool. I'm already exhausted by this, but it looks like Elon Musk is in fact going to do the thing that he wanted to do before he desperately didn't want to do it and then was forced by pain of a $1 billion fine to do. That is by Twitter. He's going to be in control of Twitter and we are all going to have to apparently deal with that. Now, Twitter is in a bad way. Not because of the bots or whatever excuse he came up with to not have to follow through on his contract. No, there's a new report showing that Twitter is struggling to keep heavy users who account for about less than 10% of actual users, but generate 90% of all tweets. I can think of a few names who I think make up a significant portion of that. They've apparently been dropping off. I can sort of get that. Twitter has a lot of problems. It also has a lot more coming because Elon Musk has made clear that he wants Twitter to be more like Truth Social or Parler or all of these other right wing sites, which I will have you know have existed for a bit. And if people wanted that, they could have gone to those places. Instead, they didn't. They stayed on Twitter. So it seems like a bit of a weird business model going forward to turn your product into a thing that is far less popular, already exists, and nobody wants. But whatever, I'm not the billionaire. Yasmin, what do you think Musk taking over, what effect do you think it'll have in the near term?
You know, it's just like capitalism, right? It's like we're lousy for choice, but all the choices are the exact same. And I will say, I really do want to hate on Elon Musk for his dumb sense of humor. But let's be real, if I was one of the richest people in the world, I probably would say a lot of dumb things just for my own amusement. I feel like I already do that in life, but I just don't have billions of dollars to make people pay attention to me. But as far as Twitter itself, I have a love-hate relationship with Twitter. It's mostly hate. I don't like the platform. I don't tweet very often. As of this morning, I thought I only had like 200 followers on Twitter, but I have way more than that. I didn't know. I never go on there. But the thing is, I actually tend to actively avoid the platform as much as I can while doing the work that I do. And this is actually because back in 2015, which we were talking about earlier, I was working in marketing, and one part of my job was to comb through Twitter every morning for content or whatever. And back in 2015, it was miserable. Trump was running for president, Obama was on his way out. The racists were out, they were bolder than ever, and all these, you know, very right-wing, dangerous people were speaking out on Twitter. And I feel like I literally watched Trump get elected via Twitter. And I must have been one of the only people who wasn't surprised when Trump kept advancing in the race. And I wasn't surprised when he won the thing because I watched it all happen. It was the most vile and ignorant things getting thrown out into the internet with little to no oversight. And I mean, it was scary to watch. I think if Twitter goes down, I will not miss it. Faster communication is not always better. I think it's like we've all forgotten how to think before we speak, and we are hurting as a nation for it. Twitter needs, something needs to happen. And the direction that Elon Musk wants to take it in, I don't think is the right direction.
Yeah, and look, in the end, we don't know what direction it'll take. I mean, we know what he said he wants to do. We know what the right wing wants him to do. And Elon Musk sucks, so there's a good chance that he'll do those things, that he'll free up the Nazis and the transphobes and everything to launch targeted coordinated campaigns to drive good people off of Twitter. It's likely that we'll see more of that, more anti-Semitism, more calls for political violence, more misinformation, you know, bearing on elections or medicine and things like that. But we also know that he probably doesn't want to lose billions of dollars on this. And so if he does make good on his promises to the right wing, advertisers are gonna flee and people aren't gonna wanna stick around. They don't want to be in a hellhole. Twitter's bad, it can get worse. And people aren't gonna stick around if they do. He doesn't wanna lose a bunch of followers. And you know why I know he's worried about this? He put out a statement earlier today on Twitter titled, "Dear Twitter Advertisers," telling him that Twitter cannot become a free-for-all hellscape where anything can be said with no consequences. They're going to do all this to make it warm and welcoming for all. Well, not both of those things can be true at the same time. You'll note, by the way, that it wasn't a message sent to Twitter users that you don't have to worry, it's gonna be a nice place. He sends it directly to the advertisers because that's who he actually cares. But it is either gonna be the free-for-all place that the right wants, or it's gonna be warm and welcoming. It can't be both. And there's a third alternative as well, by the way. Elon Musk is very into the idea of owning Twitter now. He was also very into the idea of making spaceships or cars or tunnels or flamethrowers or robots or whatever. He's like me with hobbies. He starts a business or buys a business and then he gets bored and he moves on. Do you think, like, are you ready to bet a bunch of money that in a year he's gonna be thinking about Twitter every day? That he's not gonna have moved on to God knows what, a new game console he wants to make, or maybe he's on crypto again or something. He doesn't focus on things, he doesn't commit to things. Now that doesn't mean that Twitter isn't gonna end up sucking. If he just takes off all the regulations and then goes away and ignores it, it can still suck without his active participation. But it's entirely possible that he's not gonna be an active participant for long. Any final thoughts before we move on, Yasmin?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the only thing that Elon Musk really, really, really cares about is his own net worth, right? So if he goes in the direction, like you said, on the very, very right wing aspect of things, he's gonna go the same way as Parler. He's gonna go the same way as Truth Social. People are not on those platforms, and they're not popular platforms because there's not that many people. Most people are not super far right wing in this country, despite what the GOP would want you to think. And despite what people like Trump would want you to think. So ultimately, we'll have to see. I'm glad that you compared yourself to Elon Musk with his, you know, attention deficit, because I was thinking the same thing about myself. I was like, ooh, I do that a little bit. But not definitely not on any kind of scale that's comparable to what Elon Musk is up to ever.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. And honestly, like the thing is, Elon Musk is gonna be fine. Wealthy people are gonna be fine. Like, Twitter is not the same for all different types of people. All different types of people do not suffer the same sorts of harassment and death threats and threats of rape and coordinated hate campaigns and everything. And we're gonna see if the media is gonna do a good job of covering how Twitter changes over time. You might recall at the beginning of this week, Marco Rubio announced via Twitter that one of his canvassers had been the victim of a brutal attack, which seems indisputable. The part that's in dispute, though, is that Rubio immediately said that he was attacked because he was a Republican. That's what it's about. This is a political thing. And almost instantly, there was reason to question that. The police said that they weren't told anything about a political motive or anything like that. And there have been multiple updates on this story throughout the week that we need to catch you up on, including the mother of the alleged assailant, the assailant, not the four people, the four animals who attacked this person that Rubio talked about, another error in his initial tweet. But the mother says, "My son doesn't know anything about politics. He likes fishing. My son has never voted." She says he's obviously not going to commit acts of political violence when he doesn't even care about politics and doesn't follow it. She says, by the way, that she's scared of identifying herself because she doesn't want to lose her job. She says that she only votes in presidential elections. She barely even knew much about Rubio's campaign until the actual tweet went out. Now that's bad enough. What's worse, though, is that according to police, the guy who was attacked is claiming that it was political. Now, he wasn't initially. When he first talked to police, when he was interviewed, he didn't mention anything about the attack being political motivated. Then Rubio sent out his tweet. And then when the guy started talking to the police again, he said that it was about him being a Republican. That is still possible, by the way. It is possible that this guy who cares more about bass than politics did commit an act of political violence. And regardless of the motivation, you can't attack people. It's bad, it's an assault. But it really is seeming convenient that instantly Marco Rubio jumps to the politics, that the victim's father goes on a political talk show to say that he thinks that anarchists or paid leftists did it, which is a couple steps even beyond what Marco Rubio is willing to claim. They're all claiming that this is political persecution when so far the evidence doesn't demonstrate that. Yasmin, what do you think?
Yeah, like Republicans don't miss an opportunity to victimize themselves when they're not the victims in any way. And they're out here talking about how dangerous these streets are for conservatives, but just because they have different opinions, but they're the ones who are lining polling stations with guns, right? They're the ones who are encouraging their people to go to polling stations and to watch the polls, right? They're vigilantes and they're pretending like they're victims. And this guy's mom, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't she a registered Republican, the guy who attacked the Republican and said, "No Republicans in my neighborhood"? It said she was a registered Republican, I think.
I'm not sure about that. She apparently doesn't follow politics too much. She might have voted for Republicans.
She said she doesn't vote in the midterms, and she wasn't paying attention to Rubio and what's going on here. But you know, crafting a narrative in politics is kind of second nature. But the thing is, with Rubio, he saw this as an opportunity to craft a narrative that, you know, helped his campaign, or I guess I think he thought it helped his campaign, but he didn't think twice about the family whose life he has now turned upside down, yeah. Right? There's 100%. A guy whose reputation he destroyed. He called him an animal publicly. And a mother was now forced to take a stance on an issue that she didn't really care about. And she even said, "I might lose my job for speaking out about this." But I mean, these politicians, they don't care about people like that.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, you can hate that the guy attacked someone, without making it about politics. I think we should be able to agree on that. That is all the time that we have for our first hour though. Thank you everyone watching the linear platforms and listening on the podcast. We had a lot more to talk about in the aftermath though, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.